Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Isaiah Roby news dropped later after we recorded this show, so we do not talk about that. Alex and I will talk about that on Wednesday. And then also, Michele's internet goes in and out during the first portion of this podcast. So, two things to be aware of. Thanks so much for listening. Happy 4th. Enjoy the show.
This is Lee Dort, and I'm down to dunk. This is Lee Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
I'm Josh Giddey, and I'm down to dunk.
Hey, this is Kenny Hustle, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Darius Baisley, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Mike Muscala, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Poku, and I'm down to dunk.
I love cereal. Captain Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Cracklin' Oat Bran.
Oh, I can have these? I'm going to share with my team, but I'm a hog most.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, as always, actually rarely on Sundays. We used to do Sunday pods quite often, but
yeah,
not so much these days. Michele Barra. Michele, what's up?
Well, everything is wrong at the Barra Mansion. Connection is terrible. I am forced in my bedroom, which is not the best place to record. So it will be an adventure.
There's a rumor going around that now that Lou Dort has a lot more money, he is trying to sabotage things for you because he knows that you're the Dort hater. And this is him just saying in your face, Michele, because now I've got as much money as I could ever want. And I'm going to ruin the internet connection so this guy in Italy cannot trash me anymore.
Well, he could have told me we could have reached like an arrangement. I could sell my opinion on Dort for like a stable line. No, I was about to say that contract actually looks better than what it is. And to defend Dort against what happened in the low post, where he said that it is like, wow, look at what whoever took from Houston and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like the Dort deal seems enormous and it actually is big.
It's big.
But we don't know. I don't think we know it yet.
No, no one's released the details yet. No one's released the details yet.
So it can very well be, hey, it's 4 years plus one that is either non-guaranteed or a team option. I don't see a player option there. And it may very well be full of incentives. Now, it's rare that those incentives are huge, but maybe it's $1 million per year. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
And if you account for the fact that the last year would probably be 20 millions, and you have an extra 3 millions that are not guaranteed unless you reach certain thresholds, then this contract looked like a 64-for-4, which is not a terrible deal for a 23 years old guy who proved to be a very good defender in the playoffs and improved steadily for 3 seasons in a row in terms of free throw percentage and 3-point percentage. This is actually, I think, what we had in mind as, hey, if it's under 16, that's not a bad deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's fine. I don't think it's a value contract for Dort. If you want to view it as an overpay, I can understand why you would think it is, especially if it's just like straight 5 years, $87.5 million. Yeah, that's probably an overpay. We don't know the contract details yet. Once those come through, I think we'll have a clearer picture as to if it makes it look better or worse or whatever. It's a fine deal for Lou Dort. To me, he's a guy who's proven he can be a rotation player in the playoffs. It's great. If you lock him up, there's a chance that this contract looks pretty good in a few years, especially with the rising cap. And then if Dort improves from here, it's great. If he doesn't improve from here, it's a fine deal. He's probably slightly overpaid. It's still a flippable deal. You know, that to me is kind of how I view it. It's a fine deal. There's nothing to be, fired up about on either side, in my opinion. So it's fine. I don't know. I can't act like it's the greatest deal ever. I also think that I want Lou Dort around anyways. And giving him a five-year deal, once we get to that fourth or fifth year, I think that's where you're going to see the value of the contract if Lou Dort continues to improve. Also, the way they've lined this up is the current rookies will be getting their new contract extensions right before Lou's last year of this deal, which may or may not be an option year. And that could be pretty important, depending on where they are in the life cycle of the team. If two of these guys pop from this class and they're going to have to pay them a lot to have Lou on a mid-tier, low to mid-tier contract in that fifth year, could be pretty important to where this team is at in that year in particular. We're talking about 5 years, five seasons from now, that it really could be. It's just an interesting time to have a player on an expiring contract who will likely be in your playoff rotation moving into that season where you're going to have to start paying guys. Because a lot of people, when they think about cap space, they think about, signing free agents and bringing people in. For this Thunder team, because they have so many draft picks and they're going to have a lot of valuable picks and they're going to have to pay Shea, they're going to have to pay Lou, obviously, now they're going to have to pay Josh Giddey at some point. They're going to have to pay Chet. And then if anybody else pops, Trey Mann, Usman, J-Dub, anybody, then you have to pay them too. That's when the cap space starts to just start to vanish, right? And that's when it's important to have manageable contracts on the books. And so to lock him up for as long as you can, I think part of the play is like, hey, things are going to get expensive here relatively soon if we get to where we want to go. And so locking Lou up until he's 28 years old, it's fine. It's good. I think that it'll end up looking better as time goes on, especially in the fourth and fifth year where like the average starter money is going to be 25, 26 million. And then you're paying well below market value on a starter. So that's kind of, I think that's kind of a good way to view it. Is it a value contract today? No. But could it be later on? Yes.
But that's what the value contract is, though. Like a contract that may have upside. If you sign him to a contract that has no upside, like I think the Steven Adams deal, we knew in the moment he signed it that it was not a value contract. That in order for him to be a good contract, he needed to be an all-star. And it was like probably the, 10% outcome of that. In order for Lou to fulfill this contract, he has to be a good starter, which he is. So yeah. I also think that this contract carries two very important things in him. Mm-hmm. The first one is that the two sides negotiated a deal that was not... how can I say this? It was not needed. Like they could have waited another year.
Yeah.
They weren't forced to do it. They decided both sides to discuss a contract and come to an agreement that was amenable to both. Because both sides could have said, hey, no, this is not what I want to do. You cannot force me into this. I have another year. So I think that this is very important because it shows that Lou is probably willing not to test the market and sign what he feels like a little bit less than what he can earn in a year from now. And from OKC standpoint, they forego the very cheap contract it doesn't make any sense for them to pay this year when they have no issues in terms of tax, and to sign a deal that is a little bit over the value that is probably perceived in the league around Lou Dort. And the second part, which is very important to me, is exactly what you said about the fifth year. Now, If it's a full year, then yeah, it's an expiring contract that you can move easily if you need space. Mm-hmm. But if it's an option, we have seen OKC doing like contract negotiations with guys like Mike Muscala. He was owed 3.5. And they said, okay, we still need you, but at 2 point, whatever. Okay. So with Dort, it may be the same. You had a very good contract. Your value is around that. Let's renegotiate a longer deal, maybe declining now from 16, 17, 18, and going another 4 years because you're crucial for what we want to do. But it's like 19 million doesn't make any sense for us going forward. Yeah. So I really think that these two aspects of the contract are very, very important for OKC.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. And I don't know. I don't know what Lou's future holds with this team. To me, it could be about, you know, holding value in the fifth year. It could just be about like maintaining the asset because Sam has been really good at that. When you think back to like the Enes Kanter deal, like he just wanted to maintain the asset. He wasn't like necessarily like, man, we got to have Enes Kanter on this team. They wanted to maintain the asset, not just let that go because you flip Enes into Melo, flipped into Dennis Schroeder, and you're able to keep that asset going. And I think that it could be the same. Those mid-tier assets are easily flippable into something else because there's a chance that Dort doesn't fit with what we need here. You know, I think that there's a chance that he does and that we need a point of attack defender and that and I've said all of this, but there's also a chance that we get to year two of this contract and it's like, whoa, okay, Dort's a good player, but man, if we don't get some real shooting on the wing, we can't make this work. And Chet is a good enough defender and Shea has turned things around. He's a good enough defender. We really just don't need him, but we could use a better power forward. Or we could use more shooting or whatever it is. Then you flip him for something else. Or if a big time player comes on the market like a Paul George did, well, the Thunder had Victor Oladipo, who they had extended, and had Domantas Sabonis. They're able to flip those guys into Paul George. Like, that's another reason why you want to keep these guys around and give them these mid-tier contracts, is that you can flip them into something better eventually. And so there's a lot of reasons to do it. It's not just that, oh my gosh, Lu Dort's going to be the third best player on this team. I don't think that. I think Lu Dort's a top eight rotation player. That's what I think he's going to be ultimately. And he could be more than that. It's possibly less than that. But to me, there's just a lot of reasons why you just keep him around. Because if his demand is $20 million and you get him for $17.5 million annually, like you probably just need to lock it up and just be done with it. And that way you can maintain the asset, keep him around. If he improves, great. If he doesn't, it's a fine contract that you can still flip. And you could eventually maybe turn him into like a big time piece along with other assets. So I think those are the reasons that you do it. Other than that, I think it's a mostly meh deal. The more I've thought about it and read about it, it's just like, it's not, I don't think any Thunder fan is like parading around saying like, oh, this is such a great deal. What a great deal. It's a fine deal. It's a fine deal that could look really good down the road, or maybe it doesn't. We just don't know. Today, it's a deal that got done, and I don't think it's going to kill the Thunder's financial flexibility in any way. So that's where we're at with it. Lots of questions came in from Twitter. This one from Michael McAfee, kind of interesting. So Mark did an interview when the rookies were introduced. He said that Mark says that most of the guys align with their values, there being the team. Excluding guys that we don't believe will be on the roster next year, who are the guys in the program that you think least naturally align with the new brand of Thunder basketball, and why is it Bazley? I just lost McKelly. This is interesting. I think that we're talking about players that don't quite fit with what the Thunder want to do. Maybe that's culturally, maybe that's on the court. I think Darius definitely is one of those guys that theoretically could fit, but in some ways doesn't. His decision making is the one. Excuse me. His decision making is the one that you do worry about. Decisions that he makes with the basketball, decisions that he makes within the offense. Yeah, I think that he's definitely one that you struggle with a little bit. And then, I mean, Théo Maledon he's a fine decision maker. I don't know that he's a great decision maker. I think that he's definitely one. And then everybody else, I think, is, you know, fits pretty well. And maybe Lou is one of those guys too. When we're talking about just like decision making and on the court, like he doesn't quite fit that mold of a player, but I think the competition level is something that Thunder really look to and that they really like. So I think that's also a part of it as well. Let's see. Let's go to another question from at Simon Eat Dog. He says, Alex mentioned that report of the Suns organization not prioritizing the draft and having minimal scouting department. Knowing the Thunder have a heavy emphasis in the draft, do you have any inside knowledge to the depth of scouting, the scouting department, structure, personnel, etc.? I don't know specifics. However, I do know that they definitely value scouting, international scouting. I mean, I can assure you that especially in non-COVID times, that the Thunder have seen all the guys in the draft in person probably for years. You have the guys like J-Dub who kind of pop up later in their college careers, but for the most part, they're seeing these guys and they make it a priority to be a team that's present and they care very, very much about the draft. I mean, they are the anti-Suns when it comes to the draft. They want to be a part of the draft in many ways. And also it helps you in the future too, because if you have a scouting report and your scouts know everybody in the top 10 really well, and let's say somebody comes available via trade, you might want them. So there's a lot of reasons to continue scouting. And there's a lot of reasons why it's really weird that a team like Phoenix wouldn't value the draft at all. McKelly's back. McKelly, here's a question from Ethan Nickel 4. If you could only have either Shea or Giddey become a career 40% three-point shooter on 8 attempts per game, woo! Who would you choose? The player you don't choose becomes a 30% three-point shooter over their career. Ouch. Ouch. Who would that be, McKelly?
I think that you have to go Giddey. Because to me, if Giddey has that kind of shot, he becomes an incredible player. I mean, The only knock on Giddey.
Oh no, he's frozen.
The only two knocks on Giddey as a draft prospect were lead and can shoot. So if he fixes one, I do think that he is incredible. I mean, Shea had a season with 40% from three. Mm-hmm. And he was a borderline all-star. But for some reason, I see Giddey as having a little bit more of upside if everything pans out, just because he's 6'8", with something that nobody in the league has besides like five players probably, which is an elite passing vision. So if he really shots 40% from three, then he is really tall version of Jason Kidd, which is an unbelievable player.
Yeah, and on that kind of volume, I mean, he's better than Kidd, probably. I maybe not, because minus the defense, you know, because Kidd was a really good defender.
But Kidd was a good positional defender as well. It's not like a guy who could like really slide with super quick guards. He was a good defender even when he was 40, because he knew where to be. And I think that Josh will achieve that.
Mm-hmm. Ben Elephant King wants to know if the Thunder made a mistake passing on Keegan Murray at 2.
Yeah, of course. Why not? Like, why not having? No, I. I don't think that, again, when it's all said and settled from this draft in 2 years, it may not be a terrible draft pick. It's not Marvin Bagley, but it could be.
It could be. Yeah. This is just, it's a good reminder that don't use Summer League as your measuring stick for players, good or bad. Now, there's been players, I mean, look at Trey Mann had a Summer League that was just kind of like, oh no, like how good is this guy? I don't know how good Trey Mann is. He wasn't good in Summer League, I can tell you that. And, you know, for him to have a 20-point quarter against the Boston Celtics late in the season, yeah I wouldn't have predicted that was going to happen after Summer League. So don't use Summer League as your measuring stick for anybody. There was jubilation about the draft that the Rockets had after Summer League, and it was a good draft, but after like taking another look at it, you're like, yeah, it was okay. Like, it was pretty good. Like, getting Jalen Green was good. Everything else is kind of like, I don't know. But during Summer League, everybody was just falling over themselves. Even for Kuminga, yeah. I think people were falling over themselves. I don't know that people feel that way now because he couldn't play in the playoffs at all. So we'll see. At Alex_BullerJack wants to know, who do you both prefer as the third option next to SGA and Giddy in a Kenrich, J-Dub, and Dort? And are the specific roles you'd like them utilized in this season? So who do you like as kind of the third wing next to those two the most?
It's too early to say. I wouldn't rule out Jeng as a third wing.
Ooh,
now, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't rule him out as a wing, not as a wing that will be better than the other two this year. I don't think that will be the case. But Jeng is really a wing. We don't need to think about him as a power forward necessarily. Mm-hmm. He's more a guard than a power forward today. I'm quite convinced of that. He was playing the two guard basically in NBL.
Yeah.
I love Kenrich. You know that I do. I mean, he is perfect for that role, especially if his three-point shooting improves a little bit from last season. He was down from the year before. So Kenrich Williams that has like a 37% three-point percentage from the corner, which is not unattainable, is a very good player that I want as a as a wing. Now, I don't think that he will start, but I wouldn't be opposed to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who I would probably want to see J-Dub in this role the most, just because he is such a multi-skilled offensive player compared to the other two. Not that the other two can't do anything on offense, but I look at J-Dub and think of him as somebody that can take possessions in the pick and roll. He can shoot it. I would also just like to see those two operate with like a real shooter next to them. And Kenrich has been a good shooter in spurts. I don't know that he's going to get the respect of a shooter. Whereas with J-Dub, I think that he can get the respect of like a real shooter. And so what does that look like? I think is a really good question, because I think it'll open things up. And then defensively, it's not that inspiring, honestly. It's going to be just like Chet's going to have to clean up everything for this crew. So
yeah, but if you want to go all offense, why not getting like Trey Mann in the mix? Like let's just bomb from anywhere.
Hey.
I
think Trey's a part of that too. I think Trey should be in that mix as well. He's going to get forgotten in a lot of these discussions just because he's not the new shiny toy. Like, Dort's got his new deal. We have this new guard to play around with. Like Kenrich has the lunch lady hair. You know, don't forget about Trey. Trey's an interesting piece to all of this. Let's see.
Yeah, I think so.
At Michael McAfee, does Dort's contract number suggest that he will be the starter for the foreseeable future? For me, it's hard to see him paying him that much more and come off the bench unless Jang or Jalen really pops. Yeah, I don't think that it means that he's the starter for the foreseeable future. No. That number is actually below the level of the average starter now. And it takes a while to like recalibrate our brains to like what an average starter gets paid. And from what I've heard, this is below that now. So I don't think that they're married to any situation, honestly, with regards to starting or who's coming off the bench or whatever. I think that it remains to be seen. Will he start this season? Yeah, I think he will. Will he be the starter next season? I don't know. Will he be on the team next year? I don't know. I don't think that a number commits you to a certain level of whatever. You know, Ennis never started, and he made a lot of money for a big man coming off the bench back then. So I think you can bring him off the bench if you need to. Just like the Celtics bring Marcus Smart off the bench as a guy who comes in and defends and will take shots. And I think that role has worked for them. And I think that you could see that working in Oklahoma City with him as well. So so we'll see. I'm not married to the idea that he starts, so. McKelly looks like he's deep in thought, but he's frozen. We're having extreme internet issues with McKelly today. Let's see. Let's go at Jake Boyle, too. Can you speak to the underrated part of Dort's deal, the fact that it keeps the philosophy that if you land in OKC, we do right by it, the players? I think this is very important for helping make the Oklahoma City organization a place where players want to play. I think it could be part of it. However, I think that you can't make all of your decisions based on that philosophy. I think that you're going to have to start making decisions for the team to get better itself and not just to help your philosophy of doing right by players. I think that that's just something that's ingrained within the organization. They're going to do right by players, but I'm not necessarily sure that that's the case here. I think this is a deal that got done because it was good for the organization and for him at the end of the day. And I don't think they were just like, whatever you want, you can have it. I don't think that's how that went. JJ Miller, real talk. With all the shooting bigs in OKC and the possibility of Josh Giddey is closer to Joe Ingles and Magic Johnson, why not bring back Russ? I don't understand the question, and they're not going to bring back Russ, which is just a fact. MJ underscore Horner, Shea seems set on being the point guard. Do you think he accepts a Steph-like point guard role where he's off the ball as much or more than he is on the ball? He's going to have to accept some role that requires him to go off ball some. He can't have the ball all the time, especially whenever you've got multiple ball handlers in the lineup. But the thing it's supposed to do is make life easier for him. So that he doesn't have to be this like heliocentric James Harden. I have to carry everything. And then I break down in the playoffs because I don't have enough energy type of thing. So using Steph as the comp is a tough one because Steph is one of a kind. So, yeah, I don't know that that's necessarily the direction that I would go with it. But I'm trying to think of a good example. I mean, you think about like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, in the way that they have to share duties. But you hope they're linked a little bit better. So there's not a great comp for the situation, honestly. Because there's not a team that's put as many creators on the floor like Oklahoma City has. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, try to figure out this situation with Kelly. We'll be right back. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When I was looking for somebody to hire for my team, I had to go to LinkedIn Jobs because you just don't know the quality of these candidates. And the good thing about LinkedIn Jobs, it kind of helps you filter through and find the best people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/dunk. That's linkedin.com/dunk to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back after that quick break. At JD underscore Brown, for each rookie, what's the most important thing that you hope to see during summer league? Good question. For Chet, I mean, he's the number two pick. There's some pretty high expectations for a guy like that coming into summer league. So for Chet, you just want him to kind of hold up against the good competition of the summer league. And just hope that he doesn't get yammed on every single game, which I don't think he will. But I think that you hope to see like 10 points or more per game, getting a couple blocks here and there, showing some stuff in transition. I think those are definitely things that you want to see from him. With J-Dub, I think you want him to shoot the ball well. I think you want to see him playing in the pick and roll with a guy like Chet and kind of seeing how he handles that. You know, he really outperformed his peers at the combine. And so you kind of want to see more of that. Usman Jang, I have like zero expectations. You know, I don't know what to expect from him. I hope to see him play hard and play good on defense and maybe try to draw some fouls from the dribble a little bit. And then we'll see. I don't expect big things from him. And then Jay Will, I expect to see a lot of what we saw from like Jeremiah last year, where he's just like a functional player in like a cog in this offensive system and a good defender. I don't think we'll see a lot from him either. So really, I mean, the full expectations are going to be on J-Dub and on Chet, and they're likely going to be the ones that everything is running through in the summer league, which could be fun. I still think there's a chance that Trey plays in summer league too, so we could see more of that as well. Let's see. At Pepsi United, would you rather have Trey Murphy in the Denver 23 or Jang? The Denver 23 or Jang? I mean, I'd rather have Trey Murphy than Jang right now. But we also, I mean, he's a lot younger. Jang is a lot younger than Trey Murphy. But I like the skill set of Trey Murphy today. So I'll say Trey Murphy in the Denver 23 at this point is probably what I'd rather have. But who knows? It's probably unfair to Jang to say that. I think that he's obviously somebody that was well sought after in the draft. And, you know, I don't know what else to say. He wasn't my favorite player in the draft. That wasn't my favorite deal that Sam's ever done. And that's okay. It's one of those that you just wait and see. At Matt Ledford _, what do you think of the value is of Green and Favors right now? Any predictions on how those situations will shake out? I don't think they hold much value, honestly. I think they're both bench big men that are a dime a dozen. And I don't think that they're immediately helping anybody. I don't think that any team is hurting because they don't have them. So I think the most likely outcome is that they probably get some kind of buyout, and then they can go choose their team toward the end of free agency. That would be my guess. There's a chance they get traded. Yes, there is. Are they going to bring back something that's significant? No. So I would still lean toward buyout. And then there's a possibility of a trade. A trade would be much easier, especially if you can make a 2 or 3 for 1 trade. It would just make the life of the Thunder general manager a little easier if that were possible. So that's kind of what I think. At Michael on Sports, I know it's not always the best reflection of talent, but what are you hoping to see from the rookies and Giddy, Trey, and Poku in Summer League? So we discussed the rookies already. Giddy, Trey, and Poku are interesting. Very interesting. We will see them starting Tuesday night. They play in the Utah Summer League. They play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Alex and I will have a little recap of them. You expect to see improvement for all of those guys. I think it's important to see improvement, especially from Giddy on his jumper. I think Trey and his overall aggressiveness, I think, is something that you want to see. And then Poku, oh man, like Poku just needs to give us some kind of consistent play where you don't watch him and think, oh my goodness, does he need to go back to the G League? Like, he needs to show himself as a rotation player. That's what I want to see from him. Mikele, what do you want to see from Giddy, Trey, and Poku in Summer League?
Oh, this is a very interesting question. Can you hear me fine? Is this terrible or?
It's fine. Yeah, it works.
So, first of all, I want to be able to watch them. From Trey, I really want to see him abusing his 3-point shot a lot. Just want him to show us how he can easily get to his pull-up and just like be great at that. For Giddy, on Trey, I would also love to be able to evaluate a little bit his defense, but in Summer League, that is not what you are there to evaluate. So I don't think that you will be able to gather anything from that. From that standpoint, from Giddy, of course, I want to see the shot. I want to see how it changed. If it's quick enough, especially because, I mean, he used to put the ball on his end and then let it fly with a slow release. I want to see if he worked on that or if it's just going in, but the movement is always the same. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward for that. I think that this is basically the most important thing. Team-wise, that we will see there. With Giddy, I also want to see if he's bigger and stronger, if he looks stronger, quicker. His athletic evolution, that is something that I really want to see how it goes. Because in Summer League, you're basically facing NBA-caliber athlete, or at least you can face elite athletes. And so I really want to see how you compare with a bunch. With Pokuševski, I caught the last few words of your answer, and I think that I have basically the same opinion. Like, we need to see something consistent. We need to see him in a role. We need to see him not freestyling every single possession and do something that is actually good in terms of basketball. Like, can he make the correct read? At a certain point during the season, he was playing in a system. And I want to see him in that mold, but just more effective. This is what I think we should expect from Pokuševski.
Yeah. My expectations are very low for Poku. I just want to see a functional player out there. And if he can do that, it's great. I think we'll all feel a little bit better. If he looks like a mess out there like he did in the first half of last season, it's pretty concerning. It'll be pretty concerning. Mendenhall 10, why is Usman Jang not a playmaking Darius Bazley? I think the hope with Jang, and it's like playmaking is such an interesting word because it implies a lot of things about a player. And a lot of things that make Darius different from Jang. Because in order to be a playmaker, you have to see the court in a certain way. And you have to play the game in a certain way. And that distinction is a huge one, by the way. Like a playmaking Darius Bazley is a giant distinction. They're vastly different players just because of the playmaking. If Darius could be a playmaker, he would think the game in a way where he wouldn't do the stuff that he does, like whenever he goes ISO just out of nowhere in the middle of a game, when he goes completely out of the flow of the offense. Like, playmakers don't do that kind of stuff. They understand the game. They understand the flow of the offense. And I think that's something that Jang does well. Like, he fit really well with what the Breakers wanted him to do last year, both offensively and defensively, and didn't try to prove to anybody that he was the man. Even though he was like a heavily sought after teenager in the NBL. He played as a part of a system with grown men, and he knew what to do. And I think that it needs to be understood that, like, while Jang is like needs more experience, he's further along than Bazley and Poku were in their progressions. He's further along than those guys are. So there's a chance that we see some Jang minutes this year and him looking okay. Like, there's, and the hope is that he's a guy that can be a decision maker with the ball, a good defender, and then with upside, you know?
Yeah.
Where Bazley is, the thing that Bazley struggles with most is, in my opinion, is decision making on both ends. Because you can see the gears turning a little bit too much sometimes with him. And that's okay. He just has to work really hard to make things work, you know, for him and for the team on the court on both ends. Where I think Jang is just like more of a natural basketball player, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I also want to stress the fact that we need to really think and assess on what is the word playmaking in modern NBA. Is this making a good pass? Yeah, as well, but this is not the crucial point. I think that what we have in mind as a playmaker is a guy that is able to understand and read what is in front of him. And making a play may mean a lot of different things. There are guys like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry that don't play make in terms of assist necessarily. Steph does, Klay doesn't, but they are making plays with their movement and they are creating space. So I think that is also playmaking and decision-making and understanding of the game. So I think that what Bazley is struggling with the most is understanding how to play in a flow that maximizes him. Instead, he tries to, and to me too many times, to maximize himself And it's not good for the flow, and it's not working. Like there are players like TJ Warren that are playing not inside the system, but the ball goes in to a very substantial and nice degree. And so you can say, okay, you're freestyling, but at least you're making it work. There are players that are ball stoppers. They don't play in the flow of the game. Kawhi with the Raptors. Who cares? Like, they are making shots. And so that's fine. We basically, when you are not efficient and you want to play on your own, it's very difficult. When I saw Jang in the two games I scouted for the NBL, he was playing in the flow of the game. And he took shots that were good shots to take, open shots. Of course, you could do other things. You can penetrate and then pass the ball after. But those were good decisions. Now, It has to translate to the league because it's not a given that your understanding of Euro-style basketball is going to translate into understanding NBA kind of basketball. And last thing about his playing time this year. I mean, Théo Maledon played his first season, and his career in France was much worse than Jang was.
Yeah.
Jang was, as you mentioned, and as I think it was Rafael Barlow, or I don't remember which guest said, hey, this guy, he got offers from everywhere, basically. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if it was Barlow or another guest. Apologize if I got it wrong. But in any case,
it was Derek Murray.
Yeah, probably so. Sorry. Mm-hmm. To me, he like Théo Maledon was a fine player in France. This guy was, hey, I'll pay you a lot to come to the NBA, to the NBL. So I think that we should expect playing time for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of his calling cards was defense in the NBL too. You know, he is a pretty good on-ball defender. He's not the greatest athlete, but he makes up for it with his length and his just general basketball IQ. So,
yeah, if you're excited about basically swatting three-point shots, I mean, Jen can do that as well. I mean, I've saw him like swatting pull-up jumpers away just because he's quite long and he reaches quite far and he's in a good position. Now, the thing, and then I'll allow you to answer the next question, to read the next question. I really love the fact that he transforms a little bit defensively. On offense, he's not physical. On defense, he's really physical. So I really want to see that. I'm not projecting anything because we have to admit, we don't know how he will project in the league. I mean, you have ideas, but I love the fact that in defense he was, hey, I'm here, I'm aggressive, and I'm very, very aware of everything that is going on around me.
Mm-hmm. This is a question from Sean Cargill. He says, do you think the new two-way signing was just to see how he does in the summer league? The Thunder signed guard Eugene Amayori. That's probably not right. They signed him yesterday. He was playing the G League last year, 15-6-3 for the G Leagues. He's 6'7". He's a 25-year-old player. Played 4 years in college. Three of those are at Rutgers. And then has been in the G League originally from Nigeria. I know little to nothing about him. He's a thick daddy. I do know that. He's a big, big dog. It's not a summer league thing because you can sign somebody to your summer league roster without giving them a contract. So I don't think it's necessarily that. I think obviously they have more interest in him than just that. So that, I don't know. It remains to be seen. They have signed a lot of guys to these two-way spots and just, you know, cut them loose. So I wouldn't read too much into it. I think they do have a level of interest in him. The level of interest is two-way interest, and that's it. I just think they saw the way he performed in the G League, thought, okay, maybe this could work. Maybe he could be a Kenrich Williams type of wing for us. If it works out, great. You have another one. If it doesn't, cut him loose. I don't think this is about summer league, though. He'll probably play on the summer league team, but they are going to have they're going to bring several players in on the summer league team that you've never heard of. Just like they brought Eugene in yesterday and we'd never heard of him. So I do think that there is it's a notch above summer league interest.
Yeah. Or it may be just summer league interest with other teams being interest. And so you have a two way and you say, hey, I really want to see him in my system.
Yeah.
I'm not contradicting what you say. I just think that, hey, it might be that he's going to be cut anyway after summer league.
Yeah.
Because
totally possible.
Like it's given that he stays here past summer league. But maybe this is a way to say, hey, we really want to test him out and not just watching him on another G League team. Maybe he has offers and his agent played that card, say, hey, you want my guy? It's going to be a two-way, at least for the summer. Yeah. And as a team, you say, okay. Or maybe it's a Paul Watson thing that end up really poorly, but these mm-hmm. things are okay if they end up poorly because you've missed out for half of the season of Lindsay Water. Okay.
Yeah. It's these two-way deals are not detrimental. Remember Dort was a two-way contract. So you cycle through as many of these guys as you can.
No, they may.
And maybe they work out. And maybe Eugene is the next star of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't know. Nobody knows. Probably isn't. But
you're implying Dort is a star?
No. Not implying that. A lot of people, it's weird. The Dort contract is one of the weirder ones because if you act like it's okay that it happened, some people are like, oh my gosh, look at this guy. What a homer. It's a weird deal. Dort is an interesting player because you can get.
It's a hell of a player.
I don't even know what to say, honestly, about him. Do you see any of the footage from Shea playing with Team Canada against the Dominican Republic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was about to make a very nice joke when you said something and then my connection completely dropped.
Oh.
It basically took one game of Shea with that jersey to say, hey, he's going to Toronto.
Right. Exactly.
Wow. It may happen. It may very well happen. He may love that. And to me, even if that happens, I mean, if somehow Shea's camp tells you during the summer, hey, we want to be in Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the end of the world for Presti because it's going to be way more easy to win 19 games without Shea.
Yeah.
Just for fun, what's the base level for you from Toronto? The base package that you would say,
I mean, you start with Barnes, right?
Of course.
Barnes and two picks as far in the future as possible.
27 and 29?
Yeah. Unprotected.
Just that?
Unprotected. Barnes is a lot, by the way. Like, you're getting the rookie of the year. You're getting a guy that is extremely versatile. If you have Barnes and Chet, you're setting yourself up for a top 10 defense for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I do think that it might be enough, honestly. I wouldn't do it. I think that getting shot creation from the guard position like Shea is harder to find. But if Shea is just like, you have to trade me to the Raptors, I think that that's a deal that's palatable. And, you know, you really are hoping that you get Scoot next year because you're going to need another guard that creates at a high level.
Or you can play four guys that are 6'10 and above.
Yeah. Yeah. Play Jang at point guard.
Yeah, you have Jang, Giddy, Wembanyama, Chet, and Barnes.
That's right.
That is insane.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is something where you have all the leverage because there is absolutely no way you are doing Masai a favor. Like, it's just, right. You want him? Hey, nice. We don't have any obligation to. The second part of the Shea experience with Canada is that he brought up, again, the playmaker kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is, again, not an issue. Now, if Shea comes into the season doing the things, I'm trying not to curse, that he was doing in Canada or in the second part of the season, Giddy can be as good as he wants. The ball will be in Shea's hands.
Mm-hmm.
When they have to share the court together, I'm sure that Giddy and Shea will find a way to have Shea as the play finisher.
Yeah.
And Josh as the play initiator. That may be, hey, I'm creating an advantage for you in less than 7 seconds. You'll have the defense at your mercy in 7 seconds, and then you can cook. Because I think that Giddy can do that.
Yeah.
Like a screen between Chet and Giddy can shift the defense on one side of the court. You give the ball to Shea with 15 on the clock, and you just destroy people. So I really have zero issues with that. I don't think that will be a problem, especially if Shea is a 30-point per game kind of guy. Like, if that is what we will get, the plan A is going to be the plan. Because, I mean, if Shea is able to average that, OKC is in a great spot, and he will be extremely happy to be in the contention for the scoring title next year. Because if, again, Shea can do that.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where you give the ball up so you can get it back in a better position. And that's what they were trying to do. And even Giddy had communicated that too. And Giddy's really good at that. So also they're playing the Dominican Republic. So it's like, take it with a grain of salt, man. Yeah, he's going to cook those guys. They're playing a zone defense that looks like one that you'd see at the YMCA. Like, don't take a ton from it. He looks really good physically. He looks pretty impressive. And he can just cook those guys. He had a 16-point quarter. Yeah, he's awesome. He's awesome. And he's going to be awesome next year. I think he's going to take another leap next year, which could be really good for your predictions, Mikele. He's a really good player. And the thing is, like, the Thunder value that. They give him a max contract. And they're going to put the ball in his hands. And I think that they're trying to make life easier for him by giving him players that are extremely competent next to him, that know how to think the game and know how to play the game. And I think that Shea is a part of this plan. You know, I think that he's a part of what they're doing. I think they would have already traded him and gotten a boatload of assets for him if he wasn't. So I wouldn't worry about the trade rumors. I wouldn't worry about any of the stuff about, is he a point guard? Is he the guys? Listen, like, and a lot of people are like, I don't know if he can be the 1A player of a championship team. Like, what are we even talking about? Like, you don't know that. He's still a really young player and hasn't been optimized yet and hasn't had great teammates yet when he's been at this level. So give it time before you decide at home, sitting on your couch, that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander isn't the number one guy on a championship team. You don't know that. I don't know that. We have a lot to learn about who Shea's going to be with this crew and what it looks like. And like, this is still in some way step one, because we are now getting another blue chip prospect in here that's going to change the face of everything that they've ever done here as long as Shea's been here.
Yeah. And can we say something? Because I think that this is 1A on a championship team is BS argument on any level about any player. Like, there are literally five guys to me that are A1 on a championship team and are the guys that actually did it. I remember hearing, hey, Dame Lillard can be the first option on a championship team. Okay, maybe. He wasn't. He isn't. James Harden wasn't a number one option, nor number two option. Joel Embiid is not. Like, of course he can be. Of course it can happen. But the point is, it has to happen. Like, it's not that you give the max only to those guys. Those guys are the top five player on the league.
Right.
In the league. Those are the number one guy on a title team. No one else. The other guys, it may happen. But part of it is prove that in that moment, you're able to deliver. And I mean, just look at the last finals. I mean, there were players on one side of the court that were able to deliver in that moment and others that were not. Now, is Jason Tatum a guy that can't be a number one guy on a title team? No, I think he can. He still has time to do it, but he's not now. Otherwise, Boston will have a title. I know that it's tautological to say, hey, if he did it, then he is. But for this specific thing, you really have to deliver. And so to say that a guy that played 4 years in the league on teams that had no chance to get there is not one, is, yeah, of course. But he can be an All-NBA type of guy. He can be an All-Star next year. And this is why you really, really take care of those guys and you want to build with them. Because otherwise, I think that, as you mentioned, OKC would probably have LaMelo Ball instead of him. I think that trade was really on the table for OKC. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Mobley, but I mean, I think that package was discussed, and I'm not sure. I really would love to know if Shea was offered or not.
Yeah, I would too. I'd like to know that too. Shea_media wants to know, I think undoubtedly the best defenders on the team next year will be Chet and Lou, but who would you rank third?
It's Kenrich.
Yeah. Kenrich.
And I don't think that Kenrich is necessarily number three.
Yeah, it's probably Kenrich. It could be Jeremiah. You know, just as like a cog in the defensive system. He's not going to stand out in a lot of ways, but I think that he will be, if the Thunder have a top 10 defense and it's like Chet and Jeremiah starting, I think that that's like two really, really smart defenders on the front line.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to start like a really good defense. So I think that it could be one of those guys. It's going to be somebody that's doing the little things, honestly. Like the loudest defender on the court is going to be Lou or Chet. And then it's going to depend on really solid players around them. So, yeah, it's probably one of those guys. I think that makes sense. Let's see. OKC Skittles. Who is more valuable to OKC as of today, Chet or Shea?
In terms of play, I think it's Shea, and it's not particularly close. In terms of value, I think that Shea is probably a little bit higher, but not too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like Chet is number one or number two in most of the boards, and a guaranteed top two pick has immense value. Like it doesn't get you Durant necessarily, but I think that if Chet was on the market for KD, he wouldn't come last as, hey, we need someone. Like, I don't know. It's very, it depends also the receiving team. Like for some team, Chet may be more valuable. For San Antonio, I think that Chet will be extremely more valuable than Shea.
Yeah.
Because it allows them to be in rebuilding mode for a little bit longer. So I don't think that you can trade Chet to the Spurs, but you can't do that with Shea. For Toronto, probably Shea. For a team that wants to win tomorrow, it's surely Shea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're both extremely valuable. Like if you were to put either of them on the trade market tomorrow, which you wouldn't, I think you could get a lot for both of them. But Shea's proven a lot in this league already. So yeah, I think it's Shea, but Chet has the ceiling to be the guy. You know, he's got...
Shea will do multiple picks.
Yeah. 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 No doubt. Okay, we're going to stop there. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're getting close to 3,000 subscribers. Would love to have you guys join us on YouTube if you are just listening to this on the podcast-only feed. Hope you guys are doing well. I'm going to Vegas this week. So if you're going to be in Las Vegas and want to join the Athletic NBA show live, I think the plan is to do those at 2 o'clock every day from the 7th through the 11th. So if you are available to come join us on the concourse of the Thomas and Mac, we will be there. So come hang out with us. We'd love to see you. Especially Thunder fans, I would love to talk to any of you guys. It's going to be a really fun summer league for Thunder fans. So would love to see you guys there. Hope you guys have a great week. Happy 4th of July. And we will talk to you guys again on Wednesday.